Well, hello, this is Jeff Gattiosi, and you're on MisplacedStraws.com, where music comes to life. And when your father is the king of the blues and you decide to follow him into the family business, you better have the talent to back it up. And Shirley King, daughter of the legendary B.B. King, has no shortage of talent. She's about to release her latest solo record, a collection of blues and rock classics featuring some legendary friends. It's called Blues for a King. And I'm honored that Shirley is taking some time today to talk about this record, her dad, and so much more. Welcome, Shirley King.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me, and thank the audience for wanting to know more about Shirley King.
My pleasure. And let's start with the new record, Blues for a King. It's quite an eclectic group of songs, from blues standards like Did You Wrong and That's All Right, Mama, to classic rock staples like Can't Find My Way Home and Feeling All Right. How did you decide on what songs to pick for this collection?
I am just totally enjoying telling everybody. I didn't select the songs. I didn't select the guitar players. I never would have picked these songs because I wasn't familiar with them. I'm a blues singer. Mm-hmm. But this was a total brainstorm idea by Cleopatra Record and Mr. John Lepton. This all came from them. I had no idea what I was going to be doing because once they offered me money to record an album, and with my dad gone and not working that much, I was glad to talk money. But I had no idea what I would be doing. And when I got the song list and was told what I was doing, I just almost started crying because I couldn't feel that this was going to work for me trying to do the song that I only maybe had heard but never taken an interest of as far as me recording it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a total surprise. It was like being put in a room to do a test and you didn't know what was going to be on the test.
But in a way, though, I think that works out really well because your interpretation of some of these songs, it's not what people would have expected, and it breathes new life into it. So it's very cool.
It works out well. I cannot say this enough today how this started out with me feeling like scared to tackle, just intimidated of the songs. And even though I idolized Etta James, when they requested me to do At Last, I just went in the studio and started crying on some days because I didn't want to do something and people started talking about me because mm-hmm. I didn't do it well or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's what I saw. But ever since I've been doing interviews, and this probably is about my 25th interview, I've heard nothing but very good reviews and whatever. So I am so glad that I didn't fight with the record label and I didn't keep on being mad because I didn't do it to the record label, but I just did it to John because we were kind of like, you know, he was the one brought me in.
Mm-hmm.
I was complaining by him being set in his ways. He wasn't paying me no attention because they knew what they were going to do. So right up until today, I have to give all that credit to John for bringing me to Cleopatra Records and for them putting their heads together and coming up with this great How B.B. King Got Famous idea, because that's what it is. That's what I see it as.
And were the company and John Lappin, were they also responsible for bringing in a lot of the special guests? Because you have guest guitar players on every song, and you have some just real heavy hitters from, you know, Robin Ford, Steve Cropper, and Junior Wells, and Martin Barr. You know, was it the record company that brought those people in?
Everything was done through John Lappin. I don't know if he brought all the guitar players in, but he's been working with big stars like that for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So he told me he was going to get guitar players on my CD. And I went to recommend some that didn't, you know, wasn't very famous and everything. He said, nope, leave it up to me. So I would say that John brought these guitar players in, but I don't know that for sure because they didn't have me involved in anything after they got through getting me to sing on these tracks. Nothing else was Shirley King's part of it. All they wanted me to do is do the song.
And you mentioned Etta James earlier in your cover Out Last. I mean, you had no shortage of just amazing female musical role models as you were growing up, you know, like Etta James and Ruth Brown, Mahalia Jackson. Growing up in and around the business, did you understand just the enormity of their talent, or were they just, you know, friends of your dad? You know, how did you see them when you were growing up?
Actually, Etta James was somebody I saw when I was 13 years old because my father was out touring with people like Jane Brown, Jackie Wilson, Sam Cooke. He wasn't on stage with blues people. I started meeting blues people when I came to Chicago. Mm-hmm. I only saw show business people when I was growing up, and Etta James was the only female on the show with those guys. And when she walked down the stage to me, that represented me. Even though I admired my daddy, he's my hero, but mm-hmm. Etta James was like me. She was a female, and when she came out and I looked at her, I go, oh, my God, I want to be her. I want to mm-hmm. be like her. That's what I said. Then she started singing. I mean, I had never heard any female sing like that in person. That was the first female artist that I saw in person. And from 13 all the way up until I started singing, I always tell everybody in every interview she was my idol, blah, 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 blah. But after her, I started meeting so many female vocalists. I met Etta James. I mean, I didn't meet Etta James. She was not a person. But my son made her call me one time on my birthday and wish me happy birthday.
Oh, really?
Yes, my son. My daddy said he couldn't do it. He said, honey, Etta James is on this show with me, and she don't even speak to me. He said, she used to be my girlfriend, and she... He said, so I can't help you with that. And my son went on the road with my dad when they was doing one of those B.B. King festivals, and Etta James was on the show. And my son, for some reason, made Etta James like him. For some reason, he made her call me on my birthday and wish me a happy birthday. I'll never forget it.
That's fantastic.
But I didn't meet all the female artists through my dad, because once I got involved in singing blues, I started being opening acts and I started being on shows with different people. So Ruth Brown was somebody I did meet at one of my dad's shows, and she spent hours talking to me about how it was to be a female band leader. I mean, mm-hmm. just at the Maryville Theater, she just went in the dressing room and she just spent a lot of time talking to me, treating me like I was her daughter. And she, when she had got sick and was performing in Las Vegas, I would on purpose go to Las Vegas just to go to the club where she was working at and watch her with all this class, even though she had been put in a wheelchair and everything. The lady just had class above mm-hmm. class. And that made me come over to that way, too, because that's the way I was raised by my father, to come on stage and just look sharper than a blues singer's supposed to look. Don't go out there looking like the blues, because don't nobody want to look at you looking like the blues. And I saw that in her. Then living in Chicago, I was able to hang out with Coco a lot and be around her a lot, mm-hmm. and then all some of the rest of them. But the bigger names, I didn't get a chance to meet everybody I would like to have met, because I would have loved to have met Big Mama Thornton, but I met her sister. I was stranded out in L.A., and she gave me a bus ticket to get back home to Chicago. And I thought I was going to get a chance to meet her sister, but she passed before you know, I could meet her.
Yeah.
So I didn't get a chance to meet her. But like I said, the other women that I did get a chance to meet, a couple of them was up on the daddy's watch. But most of them were people that I end up performing and being on stage with from time to time. And I just saw the strength that you had to have to be a female blues singer, because the whole time I've been singing, the whole 29 years I've been singing, I've been my own band leader, and it's been hard because people don't like to respect women being band leaders.
True, very true.
Yep.
And, you know, few people in the world are as tied to a city as your dad is with Memphis. When you were growing up there, I mean, did you feel sort of how important your dad was to that city?
You know, can I be honest?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Okay. My dad, Memphis is getting a chance to earn all the attention now from my dad. because mm-hmm. of the radio thing, because he did the little commercial, because he did his first recording at a Wild Man Memphis, and because his cousin lived in Memphis and he came and hung out on Memphis. But I feel so bad that the state that I was born in, the state right across the bridge from mm-hmm. Memphis, which is West Memphis, is where all of my dad's musical legacy really got started there, because he was going over there to perform and do shows. It wasn't so much in Memphis, but nobody's speaking up for Arkansas. And, you know, if you really Google search and read back, my father was leaving Memphis after the radio station and doing the jingle for the Pepsi. He would leave and go to West Memphis, and Sonny Boy had a job over there, a regular job. And he had to double up or something. Anyway, he needed my dad to go in one weekend and sit in for him. And the lady that owned the place, my dad came in and played. And because he was generating attention from being on the radio and everything, and he was really fine. My dad was really fine.
Mm-hmm.
All the women showed up. She had a packed place for a whole weekend. And the men would come in to watch their women, but they would go in the room and gamble. And daddy would be in there encouraging all the women to have fun, and some of them be wanting to be his girlfriend. So really, things musically at first was happening for my dad in Arkansas, West Memphis, Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Then he went to spreading out in Arkansas. He went to spreading out in Missouri. He went to spreading out in basically those two states had him for him. Because it wasn't a whole bunch of, you know, the juke joints were places off into the field where they allowed you to, on Friday and Saturday, to go and hang out and have a good time. And that's why the guitar got burned up. Didn't get burned up. But that's where the guitar story came from in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. It did not come from Memphis. But Memphis have earned all the credit off of my dad. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that as being the truth. I never hear them mention West Memphis. I never hear them mention Helena, Terrell, and that's where all the baby mamas came from. You know, because wherever my dad was playing at, he was collecting his girlfriends along the way. So a lot of this stuff actually doesn't all belong to Memphis, but, you know.
You mentioned the Good Time story, and that's the famous story where your dad went in to rescue his guitar after the place burned down over two men arguing about a woman named Lucille, and that's where the name came from.
Right. And that was in Blackfish Lake, and that was in Arkansas. That was not in Tennessee.
Well, you know, it's funny because about a year and a half ago, my wife and I sort of made a pilgrimage down to Memphis to kind of see sort of that living history of the blues. And we did go over to West Memphis, Arkansas, and, you know, down through the Delta. So, you know, if you look for it, the memories are there, you know, around Memphis, you know, in West Memphis and down through the Delta on, you know, 61 going to the crossroads. But, you know, really, you know, like I said, Memphis sort of takes the credit for your
death. I'm saying that if the Lord allowed me to live, if the Lord allowed me to stay here, because I was with my dad from the time I was 2.5 years old up until the day he left this earth. I was sitting up over his head when he went down on the stage at the House of Blues. I was with him December 2014, before he left here. And I know where my dad, you know, most people do research and write books about him. But they're so leaving out all the places that he really made that little change at. And it's like so unfair. But then the people that live there don't even know that they're missing out on B.B. King's history, legacy, because they're not promoting, hey, what about when B.B. King, and you will find people that followed him around all those places that will talk, but the longer you wait, the less are you going to find, because a lot of people, you know, that started out with him, they leaving like he did. So until that truth is set in motion, nobody's going to know that. You know, when people keep on approaching me, come out, B.B. King on Bill Street. I'm going like, why don't you go over there in West Memphis and try to find out how he did over there in West Memphis? You know what I mean? Why don't you why don't you find out where Lucille got her name from? Make a tour. Do a tour of that, you know? But a lot of people don't really know that because they're just going by whatever they read in a book. And I am part of my daddy's walking history. I am part of that.
And now I believe in Mississippi, isn't his childhood home, I believe it's a museum, or because I remember going past it when we were down there. So, yeah. You know, but unfortunately nobody's really done what you said. I kind of make it a full tour so you can experience the whole history.
My daddy really wants everything to be collected and brought back to his home base. Now, I don't, you know, people start taking things from him before he got sick and passed. But I don't know if he wanted to be buried at the museum, but they saw fit to do that because they figured people would come there just because you said B.B. King is buried there. Well, B.B. King didn't do a whole lot of performing in Mississippi, so people are running to Memphis where his name got blowed up. Mississippi is not getting as much as it should get because it was where he started out at. But he had to leave Mississippi to go to work. He had to leave Mississippi to go to Memphis to get known. He had to leave Memphis to go to West Memphis to make the little change at night playing in a band. Then he had to come to Chicago to get a little bit bigger. Then he had to go and get with a manager out of New York. And that's when the guy started doing to him like Cleopatra Records is doing to me. Once Ben Steinberg started putting him on stages with people like Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck and the Rolling Stones, that's when he blew up because now you got this overall, not just depending on your urban people knowing B.B. King. You got your way famous rock stars and big stars.
And all of their fans.
Right. And that's when he really started making it big, and believe it or not, he was 68 years, going on 69 when he got with Sid and started doing all this. And really, I would say from 69 up until he left this earth is when he started making a bigger name for himself. And I am 69. I did this CD in 69. I'm 70 years old, and I'm getting all these calls like I'm a big rock star. I'm getting interviews like a rock star.
There you go.
Yeah, so it's amazing sometimes how that's why it's good to tell your own story a little bit here and there.
It definitely is.
Because people don't get a chance to cash in on you from doing research. And sometimes they be trying to talk to me. I be like, excuse me, if I'm telling you something and you want to tell me what you know, you're telling me what you done researched and found out. I'm telling you what I know because I was there, you know. So, yeah, it's amazing to find out that my dad, the one place that he did a lot of playing at in his earliest days was mostly Arkansas and Missouri.
Go ahead. Well, you know, and you said you mentioned how, you know, your dad was on the road and trying to hook up or was being matched up with all of these other bands. I mean, you know, the way the world is right now, nobody's going on the road. But once this clears up, I mean, do you see yourself getting back out there and kind of doing maybe a little bit bigger tour for this than you normally would, kind of hitting some markets that you normally wouldn't get to?
Actually, what I see happening now is me getting stuff added on to what I did so much of singing and performing on my own in this last 29 years because my father told me, don't coattail on his name. Go out there and make it known. When you Google search, you will see that Shirley King have did a lot, but most of that was because she was B.B. King's daughter. This is the first time I will be able to go out and tour on what Shirley King has done, not because I'm B.B. King's daughter, but because of the record company being smart enough to put me in a place. They Google searched too. They found out who I was and what I could do and everything, and they didn't just grab me and put me there because I was B.B. King's daughter. They use some of the techniques of saying, now, this is how B.B. King did. Maybe we can do the same thing for his daughter since he's been working for 29 years. So all this is going to do for me is have me going probably to another audience that will come see some of these legendary guitar players. And me getting up on the stage, jamming my song with them, or them jamming one of their hits, and me getting in on the stage and jamming with them. You know, the names coming together I don't have the songs out that my dad had where everybody get on the stage, because his manager made everybody, if you want to jam with B.B. King, you got to sing one of B.B. King's songs.
That's right.
Shirley King don't have it like that. Mm-hmm. So it's much if Shirley King get on the stage and sing with one of her famous guitar players. Now, oh, wait a minute. But Shirley King got a song with this guitar player. Hey, let's do the Shirley King song. Mm-hmm. So I do see this being a great thing. I really do. It's all hyped up for me now, and I haven't even, the record is not even playing yet, and my Facebook is lit up today. So it's quite exciting.
That's fantastic. I would imagine. And it really is. It's a fun record. It's a good record. It's, you know, it definitely encourage everyone to check it out. It's called Blues for a King. I've been lucky enough here to be talking with Shirley King. And Shirley, thank you so much for some time. Can't wait to catch you on the road. When you hit the Northeast, I will definitely be there to say hello in person. And thanks for the time and best of luck with this record. It really is a great achievement. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And I will give you one of the biggest Shirley King hugs that I can give you.
It's a deal. We'll see you soon.
All right, then. Thank you, Dr.
Thank you so much.
Great day. Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.